Welcome to Solo Travel Girls Adventures Near and Far. This is where I share the fabulous things to see and do in Northport, Southwest Florida, and beyond. I'm your host, Jennifer Huber, also known as Solo Travel Girl. And in the studio today, we have Kim Galloway. Kim Galloway is producing this show. Kim is also the host of Facets here on WKDW. And you can tune in to Facets, which is a music show, every Monday between 4 and 6 p.m. Kim, I wonder if you're going to be playing this song because on August 21st, because that is the day of the Great American Total Solar Eclipse. And an event being staged at Oscar Share Park is being called Total Eclipse of the Park. So maybe you'll be playing Total Eclipse of the Heart on August 21st? I don't know. She's going to have to think about that one. Anyway, today my guest is going to be talking about the Great American Total Solar Eclipse that is taking place on Monday, August 21st. Now the skies from Oregon to South Carolina will be darkened in a stretch of land about 70 miles wide. And this is according to space.com. My guest today is a historian of astronomy, Dr. Steve Ruskin. He's the author of the new book, America's First Great Eclipse, How Scientists, Tourists, and the Rocky Mountain Eclipse of 1878 Changed Astronomy Forever. Now, Dr. Ruskin is an award-winning historian of astronomy. He has a PhD in history and philosophy of science from the University of Notre Dame. He was a visiting researcher at Cambridge University, England, on a grant from the National Science Foundation, and is an alumnus of the Launchpad Astronomy Workshop. Dr. Ruskin, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, Jennifer, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
What are we all excited about?
You mean this coming eclipse? You haven't heard about it? Like hundreds of millions of people in the country? No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, this August 21st, not too far from now, we've got this, what they're calling the Great American Eclipse, and I think it may be one of the biggest travel days in our country's history. I think so many people are going to be driving to see it. I know a lot of folks are flying in from around the world, too. I've heard estimates of, hundreds of thousands of people coming from all over to see this eclipse. So, yeah, it's going to be pretty crazy.
I know my brother's driving down from Corning, New York. He's going to outside Charleston, so he's taking his family to watch it. So I know they're excited about it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's sort of South Carolina, because the eclipse goes from the West Coast to the East Coast. It goes from Oregon kind of down and comes out, in South Carolina, like you said, right, kind of between Charleston and Myrtle Beach, I think. And, I think that's going to be one sort of big crazy mess, but it's probably a big party, too.
Absolutely. Now, what exactly is a total solar eclipse, and why is this one so rare?
Sure. Well, a total solar eclipse is when the moon completely blocks the sun. And they are rare. The eclipse itself lasts, the sun being blocked only lasts for a couple minutes, but it does take a couple hours for the sun to kind of go across the face of the sun. And it's only in that middle section the moon completely blocks the sun. That lasts for about 2.5 minutes in this case. So it's neat, because what happens then is day turns to night, or at least a very deep dusk, and you can see the stars and planets. So it's a rare occurrence enough on Earth to have it, over some places populous as the United States. A total solar eclipse will occur somewhere on the planet, maybe every year and a half, 2 years, but sometimes that's in the Arctic or over the ocean. And so we haven't had one in America in 40 years. And that was only over kind of the Northwest, and we haven't had one go coast to coast in 99 years. That was 1918. So it is indeed sort of rare. It's kind of the luck of the draw, but it's rare, at least for America, to have something this spectacular.
Now, what if there's, it's a stormy day or cloudy or something? Are people still going to be able to experience it, or...?
Well, that's a good question. Ideally, if you want to see, if you're going to go into the path of totality, and then, again, that's that sort of 70-mile-wide path where you can see the moon blocking the sun, if you want to see that experience of day turning to night and the sun completely disappearing for a few minutes, yeah, you do want to be in that 70-mile-wide shadow path, as they call it. And so there's always the risk, if you try to get into that strip of land, that if there's clouds, that you won't see that phenomenon of the total solar eclipse, and you see the sun's corona, which is hard to, you can't really see it any other time. That's the sun's atmosphere. So yeah, if it's really cloudy, you'll still see darkness, or you'll still get a sense of the darkness, but you won't see the sun eclipsed by the moon. If it's just kind of hazy, depending on how hazy it is, you might see something. I think it's spectacular, you know, regardless. And the nice thing is, if you don't want to travel into the path of totality, most of the United States, the 48 states, will see some kind of partial eclipse. You know, that means the moon will be blocking the sun 90% to 80 to 70. You know, the further away you get down to Baja or up to Maine, it's going to be a little bit less. But everyone can see something. It's just if you want to see the total solar eclipse, you need to be in that 70-mile-wide band.
Now, where will you be viewing it?
Well, I live in Colorado, and the closest spot for the path of totality is going to be up in Wyoming or western Nebraska. So we're going to be heading up somewhere north of Cheyenne. I haven't picked an exact spot yet. I want to be a little flexible based on the weather. But, yeah, I'm going to go up to Wyoming. And fortunately, we have some family members in Cheyenne that we can stay with because, as you've probably heard, hotels and Airbnbs have been
yes.
booked for years, months, if not years, and if anything's available, it's 10, 20 times its normal rate. So,
well, it's going to be something else. Now, what about, I hear a lot about eye safety, and doctors are expecting people to come in with eye damage or something. Oh, what can you talk about solar eclipse safety, or is there such
sure.
a thing? Or?
Well, that's important. Now, granted, I'm not, an eye doctor or even an astronomer. I'm a historian of astronomy. But I do know, first of all, in terms of what you can do to protect yourself, and NASA has a great website, and I've posted on my own website, which is firstgreateclipse.com. But NASA has a great safety website. And all you need to do is spend a couple dollars to get some solar eclipse classes, or maybe even go to your local library, because I know a lot of local libraries and even some schools are giving them out for free, but they look kind of like those old 3D glasses we used to watch movies in the 80s and 90s. They're just cheap paper glasses with some sort of polymer lenses,
mm-hmm.
Kind of like aluminum foil almost, although it's not aluminum foil. And those will work. You can stare at the sun with those as long as they're approved by it's an approved manufacturer. And again, the NASA website has the information there. I write about an eclipse in 1878 where all the which occurred over the Rocky Mountains where I'm from, and tourists came on the railroad because we didn't have a highway system then, but tourists came all the way out west in 1878 not only to see the Rockies but to see this eclipse over the mountains. And back then they had to use smoked glass, and what they did was take broken glass and coat it with soot from a candle flame or an oil lamp, and they would cut their fingers, and one lady even ended up burning her house down. So I think it's much better to spend a couple dollars and buy these eclipse glasses at your at Walmart or something, or Amazon, and do it that way. It's a lot better.
So as you mentioned, you did recently release America's First Great Eclipse, How Scientists, Tourists, and the Rocky Mountain Eclipse of 1878 Changed Astronomy Forever. And I just ordered it. I haven't read it yet, obviously, but I'm looking forward to reading it. But what parallels can be drawn between that eclipse to this one?
Sure. Well, I think it's some of the neat things that, we can easily compare is the tourism. Even in 1878, when the only way to get to the Rockies was by train, thousands of tourists, tens of thousands probably, came west, and hotels were suddenly overwhelmed to the point where one hotel owner in Colorado Springs ended up renting out all the local livery stables so he could house his guests there instead of horses. In Denver, they were starting to, when they ran out of rooms, they started renting their billiard tables and cots in the bars and restaurants and things like that. So, yeah, it was crazy back then. And I think we're probably going to be seeing something similar, although on a much bigger scale, because people can just hop in their cars and drive. But I think, it's that shadow path, right? That 70-mile-wide band that people are going to want to aim for. And I think in some of those areas, it's going to be quite crowded. So definitely some parallels there. Like then and now, there's a lot of citizen science projects. You've probably heard that term before, where they get regular people to sort of get involved and take, measurements or data or pictures or whatever. And they were doing that in 1878 as well, because as I show in the book, astronomers couldn't travel west with as big a support crew as they'd like, so they hired locals to help them either run some of their equipment or help with their photographs or even just draw pictures of the sun during totality. So there are a lot of parallels, and I write about them in the book, but I think the biggest one, I think, is that people are just as amazed at the sight of a solar eclipse now as they were back then.
Well, no, I remember, I don't know if it was in the 70s or 80s, but when I was a kid, I remember at school there was an eclipse. Obviously, it was not a solar eclipse, but I remember doing something and making the pinhole. Would that have been a lunar eclipse, I guess, or?
Well, you're right, because in 1979, because I was a kid too, there was a total solar eclipse, and that one is the one that went over the kind of the Pacific Northwest. So depending on where you were, we could see part of it, and we did the exact same thing. I remember my teachers did the pinhole camera, where what you end up doing is, so you don't have to look at the sun, because of course it's not safe.
Right.
A pinhole camera allows you to project that down on the ground. So we kind of saw a reduced image, right? A projection of the eclipse on the ground. And that's something you could look at safely. They also, I remember, used exposed X-ray film, which I understand is a little less, you know, safe, but than the eclipse glasses. But yeah, so that's what they were doing back then, using those pinhole cameras. And you could still do that today, but I think it's not going to be quite the same as, you know, looking up at the eclipse with the eclipse glasses.
Right. And I guess for photography, would you just put like the eclipse glasses over a lens, I guess? I don't know.
Well, you know, that's an option. Of course, you'd want to make sure you have something to protect your own eyes as well.
Yeah.
Professional photographers can get solar lenses, just like astronomers do. Mm-hmm. You can get an eclipse lens, or an eclipse filter, rather. I should say solar filter is what they're properly called, but that would allow you to point your telescope or your camera at the sun and, and take the picture safely that way. And there are lots of ways to do it. And there's even a project called the Eclipse Mega Movie Project, and that's easy to Google, Eclipse Mega Movie. And they are trying to get people who photograph the eclipse, even with their iPhones, to send in their pictures afterwards. And they're going to try to sort of put together sort of the world's largest panoramic image of all time, you know. So they do say, you know, experts do say that if you're in the eclipse path and during those 2.5 or so minutes of totality, at that point when the sun is completely blocked, you can remove your glasses. But at any point on either side of that, when even you see a sliver of the sun, you need to have your safety eclipse glasses on. So
if someone has to work and they can't get outside, how long do they have to wait until the next one?
We're lucky in America. We only have 7 years to wait. April 8th, 2024.
Okay.
So really less than 7 years, if you want to get technical, about 6 years and some change. We have another solar eclipse. It's not going to be coast to coast like this one. It's going to come up kind of from the south, from Mexico, across Texas, kind of go up over the Midwest and up into Canada. But it'll still kind of go through the middle of the country, and I think it'll give a lot of if anyone missed it or if anyone gets the eclipse bug and wants to go see another one, it gives us a chance to see it in just 7 years. So hopefully it's not, you know, for us at least, or for most of us, it shouldn't be a once-in-a-lifetime event.
Wow. And how did you get into astronomy, or was it more history that led you into it, or vice versa?
Well, a little bit of both. You know, like any kid, I loved astronomy, and I live in Colorado, so we always had fairly clear skies. We didn't have a lot of light pollution. So we had a telescope in our nice backyard and everything. And so I've always been interested, but I did a PhD in history of science. To make a long story short, I ended up doing some work on 19th century expeditions, astronomers who went, you know, British astronomers who went around the world to do eclipse expeditions and really more other sorts of, you know, astronomical work, and took their telescopes with them to places like Africa. So when I came back to Colorado after I did my PhD and realized that there had been this really neat eclipse in 1878 right over the Rockies, I really got into it and started writing articles and giving talks. And as this eclipse got closer, I, you know, a few years ago decided that it would be a make an interesting story. So I put it together in a book.
Well, now this is your second book, right?
It is, yeah. I wrote one. My first book was on one of those astronomers that I mentioned, a guy named John Herschel, who went down to Cape Town, South Africa, in the 1830s to survey the stars of the southern hemisphere. And I've written a bunch of articles too. And I think people are always interested in astronomy, especially when there's some human interest involved. And in my book about the 1878 eclipse that I've just put out, I talk a lot about the astronomers. There's a female astronomer named Maria Mitchell. She was America's first professor of astronomy, and really America's first professional female astronomer, and she came west to Denver in 1878, and I talk about it briefly, but I think in short, she was probably, and she brought a bunch of her former students. She taught at Vassar, which was an all-girls school. So I think she probably led the first female eclipse expedition in history with having, it was just her and her female students, and I think that was pretty neat. They observed the eclipse in 1878 from Denver.
Oh, wow. So is your third book going to be The Great American Total Solar Eclipse of 2017?
It's funny. Someone just asked me that. I thought, you know, I'll be studying The Great American Eclipse of August 21st, 2017, since August 22nd, 2017, something like that. Yeah, I mean, who knows? We'll see how it goes. But I think it's—I think this will be a pretty neat event for the country, and hopefully it'll maybe bring a few of us together too. I know it's sort of a contentious time, so it'd be neat if this was a chance for everyone to kind of forget about politics and things for a while and just kind of come together. Maybe that's a bit too idealistic, but I think it would be neat.
No, I think that'd be a lovely idea. I totally agree.
Yeah.
Now, where can people learn more about America's First Great Eclipse and learn more about you?
Well, thanks so much for asking. I have a website, First, F-I-R-S-T. firstgreateclipse.com. I'm also on Facebook at First Great Eclipse. And my book, America's First Great Eclipse, which talks about this 1878 eclipse, that's available on Amazon, you know, the usual places if you use an e-reader for Kindle on Amazon or Nook for Barnes & Noble and iTunes and all that sort of thing. And they can learn more about me as well on that firstgreateclipse.com website.
Well, Dr. Ruskin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jennifer. I really appreciate you having me, and good luck. I hope it goes well in your side of the country, too, during the eclipse.
Yes, I hope so. And maybe I'll see you at 2024.
yep, absolutely.
Thank you, Dr. Steve Ruskin, for joining me today. And again, you can visit www.firstgreateclipse.com to learn about his book, America's First Great Eclipse, and to learn more about the Great American Total Solar Eclipse, taking place on Monday, August 21st. Now, if you're not able to go into one of those areas where there's going to be total darkness, there are some options locally. Over at the Northport Library, they will have the Teen Solar Eclipse Viewing. Let's see, that's going to be between 2 and 3:30 on August 21st. Teens in grades 6 through 12 are invited to view the eclipse and learn the science behind a solar eclipse. Participants can try out viewing glasses provided by NASA and use a 3D printed pinhole viewer to watch the eclipse. Now, you do need to make reservations for that, so visit the Northport Library's website to secure your space for your teen. Now, over at the James and Barbara Moore Observatory, located at Florida Southwestern State College, the Charlotte campus, that's located at 26300 Airport Road in Punta Gorda, they're going to have a solar eclipse viewing experience from 1:30 to 4 o'clock, and that'll be at the observatory. Now, viewing is free and open to the public. You don't need to make reservations. Now, they are going to have 3 or 4 telescopes with the proper filters available to view the eclipse. They're going to have limited eyeglass filters, and they are encouraging participants to bring their own certified eclipse glasses or handheld solar viewers. One of the big safety tips for viewing the eclipse is not to look at the sun directly. The NASA website has additional information at eclipse2017.nasa.gov/safety. But you can also visit fsw.edu/charlotte/observatory to learn more about the eclipse at the James and Barbara Moore Observatory. And finally, at the Oscarshare State Park, as I mentioned earlier, they will have Total Eclipse of the Park. This event is set to take place between 1:15 and 4:15. It'll feature several activities centered around the eclipse, which the park is anticipated to have 73% coverage. Park staff will have a pinhole projector, crafts table for guests who bring a cardboard box or tube. They'll also have some ranger-made pinhole projectors for guests. And they encourage you to bring your chair, beverage, snacks, and eclipse glasses if you have them. You can contact the park at 941-483-5957 for additional information. And for this week's tip of the week, well, this has something to do with the solar eclipse. Now, as Dr. Ruskin had mentioned, most places are sold out. I don't know if people are going to be sleeping on billiards like they were back in the 1800s during the solar eclipse in the Rocky Mountains. However, there's a website called hipcamp.com. It's a startup that creates new campsites by unlocking access to beautiful private lands, such as nature preserves, farms, and ranches. They've actually found over 1,000 new campsites in the path of totality. This goes from South Carolina to Oregon. You can visit hipcamp.com to find some last-minute camping spots. Now, what also makes this unique is they have included whether these camping sites are pet-friendly. They have a map as to where the line of totality is, so you can pick out a campsite in the path of totality. And each booking gives back to the land. HipCamp enables landowners to share their corner of nature with the world while generating the income they need to use to keep the land in their hands. So again, visit hipcamp.com, search for Eclipse, and you can find a camping spot that may have not been on the map a couple of weeks ago. Well, as always, thank you so much for tuning in. If you need to get in touch with me, you can contact me at solotravelgirl@kdwradio.com. Until next week, travel boldly. Oh, girl, dancing down the dirty and dusty.